It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day. And, you know, I got a special guest for you. You know, I did that because I love you so much. We got Tony Ryan staying for second hour here from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Now, here's a retired police officer, a lieutenant for 30-some-odd, I don't know, after you get a few decades, you stop counting. I mean, long dang time. Been down, seen it all. And commanded those that have seen some more from their perspective. And as you're talking to other law enforcement, as you're in law enforcement, after you're out of law enforcement, and then all of a sudden you start to coalesce with other people that know, man, this drug war thing, seriously? You know, and you got prosecutors, you know, ex-judges. In fact, that's where I first heard of Andrew Napolitano. It's on Fox News. Everybody's all going on about. Oh, Judge Napolitano, he's good, constitutional. Good. I said, you know where we heard about him first? He was a judge against a drug war. You know? Yeah, and so he was, how did you first find out about him?
Well, that we said in the first hour, I heard Howard Wooldridge and his horse Misty going across country, being one of the first speakers on a tour countrywide for the then fairly new Law Enforcement Against Prohibition organization. I was a speaker at the Libertarian State Convention in Colorado talking about Columbine, what happened there, and the whys and wherefores, as I understood them, having been there. And he made a presentation, a lead presentation, and we had been talking, and he said, you need to come join us.
Oh, it was Judge Napolitano that was talking to you.
No. I thought we were talking about Howard Wooldridge. No.
Judge Napolitano.
I don't know him yet. I know of him, but I haven't met him yet. I know he's an advocate against of changing the policy.
Yeah, no, that's how I came across that name. I heard him, you know, years and years ago. I was going, oh, there's a judge doing it. Well, now we have here in Arizona Judge John Buttrick. You know, he is a Superior Court judge here. He's against the war on drugs. You know, he ran for governor here in Arizona. He's like, yep, war on drugs, bad. It's bad. It's bad. It needs to be done away with for logical reasons. This is bad. It's bad for a lot of reasons. And the big thing from a libertarian perspective, it's always freedom's the answer. What's the question? And the reason it is because they understand that when you start having social and economic engineering from the man, you run into all kinds of other problems, such as giving them the power over your body, which then where does it stop? It goes all kinds. You can give all kinds of reasons over the years and decades as this goes by. You'll say this. You got a lot of things to point to. But what's amazing is how long and how bad it is getting where we had prohibition, you know, in the 20s. And when was the prohibition repealed? Was it in the 20s, early 30s? When was it?
33, I believe.
So, you know, and it was what, 12 years, 13?
13.
13 years, you have prohibition, and what'd you get? Gangs.
They got the mob.
You know, that's where they got their funding. Were they against prohibition? Heck no. They needed it, right?
Yeah, and the Kennedy family.
Yeah, they made all their money with the whiskey coming in from Kennedy.
Bootleg, yes.
And they, thank you for playing. Well, you know, so now we're looking at the same kind of thing now. So what is it that's going to change? Is it a numbers thing? I mean, is it just going to collapse on itself, or are the people going to demand it? Is it, you know, we got to wait until the people that are now born after 1960 or something, you know, they're 50, 40, we got to wait until they kind of take over and the AARP goes out of existence or all the people that are retired now die off? I mean, what are you looking for to happen?
Well, we're looking for people. As I said before, the first hour, we consider ourselves an educational organization. We think a lot of things are changed through education and spelling out the real issues involved in something like this. And I think it'll happen sooner rather than later. Maybe not in my lifetime. Depends on how long I live. But there's a growing awareness. Now we have senators, Jim Webb, looking at the cost of the drug war and all of the other costs that they don't want to talk about, the corruption in law enforcement, the corruption of people that work at the border. There's an investigation, a separate investigation in the Senate going on about that now. It particularly affects Arizona. And they're revealing that, like the Border Patrol, the stats came out on the Border Patrol, hiring people all the time. Only 10% of the people that are being processed to be hired on the Border Patrol are given polygraphs. And of that 10%, because they can't afford to give it to all of them. So they select, I guess, randomly 10%. 60% of those fail. So there's 90% of people that are being processed to be hired by the Border Patrol that aren't given a polygraph. And with a 60% failure rate on the 10% that are, it makes you wonder what that's made up of sometimes. I don't mean to say anything bad about law enforcement officials that are employed, but I mean, there's something that's a big gap. You don't get hired on a police department without taking a polygraph, you know. So it's, and that's a problem. And the fact is that they're pointing out, and especially here in Arizona, the states most affected, California, Arizona, Texas, being along the border, the violence tends to creep across the border with that's involved in the drug war. You have,
just had a rancher here in southern Arizona, you know, the other day was killed.
Yes. And they think that that's related to the prohibition. I call it the prohibition, not the drug death, but a prohibition death. But all of this violence and so forth, and these people have got money to burn, these drug salespeople, selling that marijuana and so forth, and some of the other drugs. And they recruit people. And they have a story out of El Paso, Texas, a lady that was on the El Paso Police Department ended up getting $5 million from the people across the river. Excuse me. And they recruited her and said, why don't you go sign up for the Border Patrol so that you can get us even more information about their operation? And she did. So they finally busted her. But all this money, and that's part and parcel of the drug wars, is corruption. All this money that they can throw at law enforcement to get them to do other things.
What is going to be the end result? I mean, is it just going to collapse of its own weight? I mean,
well, it may. It may. Sooner or later, we believe sooner or later, people will see the light, and then they will tell their elected officials, change this, because it doesn't work the way they did with prohibition. It's interesting, though, that the alcohol prohibition took a constitutional amendment, which then they got enough people together to vote it out. This prohibition has no constitutional amendment.
Well, that was back when they used to think they had to pay superficial homage to the Constitution. They lost that a long time ago.
Yeah, now it's a living document. Yes, we know that's
it's theirs. It's what it is. The I want to ask you about the political aspect of this. The first thing you have to do is put trust in computer tabulated election results and say, okay, well, you know, the people are going to vote for decriminalization of drugs or legalization or whatever you want to call it, and then it's going to be counted accurately. You know, so that's a concern. The other thing is here in Arizona, when it was done in the 90s, they legalized it. 76, 78% legislature came right back and made it criminalized again. So what did they do? It was a gentleman, Sperling, I think his name is. He's a billionaire that owns University of Phoenix. You know, the University of Phoenix campuses, that is his, you know, his business. So he had plenty of money. Money's not, you know, short on this thing. I guess he really, really, really wants to smoke marijuana, or he cares about somebody or something. I mean, I'm not sure what his motivation is, but you know, I'm glad he's out there doing it. My criticism is that it's always kind of regular. He's not really addressing the issue. He's just trying to get, you know, I can have my marijuana for some reason. Give me a script from a doctor buddy of mine or something. And I'm going, now you're missing the whole issue. I mean, this whole thing is, you know, whose body is it? Well, they get it passed. Legislature says, nope, it's illegal again. We just decided. Because you know why? Because we can. So what they do? He paid for another initiative saying that when the people do an initiative, you can't change it. Well, then a whole bunch of other unintended consequences was, yay, now when we do initiatives, we can get whatever we want. So they go through and pass all these initiatives for taxes on cigarettes to give to their special interest buddy over here and do this and more and that and control and then do all these initiatives, and they create a special interest you can never do away with. So I'm going, how'd that work out? You know, so it's all these unintended consequences, and it's all centered around this concept that government can socially and economically engineer you. And you know what gives them the ability to do that? A piece of paper. Somebody signed it, then you got a guy with a uniform, a shiny badge, and an always available gun to make sure that this is going to get enforced, get used to it. So now we're in a situation to where we actually have those people that are dying on the front lines because they're trying to enforce this crap. Law enforcement against prohibition. They come out and they say, look, we know. And you have Sheriff Mack. He's an undercover narc guy. Speaks fluent Spanish. He knows what's going on. He's going, no. No, 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 heck no. And he'll be on next week. You got Tony, that's a lieutenant in Denver. He's going, no. So when we come back, I want to ask him more about the political process. Is it really representative of us?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
It's me, Ernest Hancock, and this is a special test for Tony. You know, and that song comes from what? Where's that from? Johnny Quest!
Oh, yeah, okay.
Johnny Quest! I know everybody's like, I know that song, but I can't do it. You know, go ahead and turn it down because I want to do a rant. You ready? Here we go. Declare your independence, all right? Name of the show. You know what the Declaration of Independence written on? Hemp! Marijuana paper. Yeehaw. And you know, the thing is because, you know, who's growing it? I mean, it's a great material for making, you know, like, material canvas. You know, you got cotton and you got hemp. Hemp is, you know, superior in a lot of ways. You know, heck, they make tennis shoes out of it. So you have the ability to use this to make paper. It's, it grows very fast. It can be part of your ethanol. It can be do this, that. So, yeah, but they don't care. Why? You know, and we'll get Tony's perspective on this, see where I made a mistake, but I'm sure he probably knows more than me. But I want to make sure I get this out. What happened in World War II, they had posters. You know, the normal guys, the National Organization for Reforming Marijuana Laws, they're always going on about how you can use hemp for all kinds of different stuff, including there's posters that were promoting the growing of hemp for World War II for Navy ropes. This was a big deal. You know, you had the founders. All these guys are there like, we're, you know, medicinal qualities, okay? Or they're doing it for making rope, too. Well, a lot of this stuff, a lot of hemp doesn't really have that much, you know, THC in it, which is the hallucinogenic properties of marijuana anyway. But they wanted to use that in a reefer madness. There's like black women will have sex with white women if they have marijuana legal. You think I'm kidding? That's exactly the kind of rhetoric that was going on. You know, all these jazz clubs and so on there. And, ooh, white women go in there. And, ooh, bad things happen. So what they do is they come up with this big propaganda thing after World War II to get marijuana laws to do away with it. Why? Because Dow Chemical and these guys had come up with nylon. And it was too expensive to really compete with hemp. So they needed to make it illegal so they could sell their nylon rope. Yay! Thank you for playing. It's always about the money. So now you have the forest industry. Tell us about that, Tony. I mean, we have the forest industry. I mean, I'm sure a lot of these guys we're watching extreme loggers on, you know, the Discovery Channel and everything with these little trees. And what the heck are they doing with these little trees? A lot of it's for paper pulp. You know, so they have farms. This, you know, what would happen if they legalized hemp? You know, would that compete with them?
Well, you can make hemp paper, like you said, Constitution. Declaration of Independence. You'd be talking about William Randolph Hearst.
Which is a publishing...
newspaper magnate.
Oh, well, what did he have to do with it?
Well, what did he publish his papers on? Newspapers on.
Well, why was he against hemp?
Well, because he was part of the... He owned forests. To sell himself to paper and so forth and so on. Harry Anslinger, one of the guys who really pushed making marijuana illegal because of all those evils you were just talking about. And, you know, those people are attacking our women and that kind of stuff. And because, well, remember Reefer Madness, remember that silly thing?
Yeah, no, yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah, okay.
It's like a joke now. You watch it, it's so
fun.
It's
for comedy hour. But anyway, so that all came about because of all of those things and economic issues and not just about whether or not it does something. And I have, in very recent times, actually, in Denver, helping them pass a couple of initiatives regarding marijuana, told people, I said, you know, I have to tell you, to be honest, and we certainly don't want to go back to making alcohol illegal, but that's what kept me employed for 36 years and gave me a halfway decent retirement. Alcohol.
How's that?
People use alcohol and the police get called.
You know, that's another thing. You know, they do Reefer Madness, all this bad, evil stuff is going to happen. And I remember a joke. Tim Slagle was a libertarian comedian. I don't know if you remember him back in the 90s.
Right.
And he had this one shtick. There was a subway guy that had run a stoplight in the subway and crashed, and there was people that got killed and so on because he was drinking on the job. And he goes, you know, if it was marijuana was legal and he was high, you know, he may have run the light, but at like 3 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, we talking about that.
and that's one thing. If you're, you know, how many violent crimes do you have associated with marijuana use?
None.
I know. It's like, you know, let's go. I feel like doing Flintstone cartoons. I mean, you know, it's just not an incentive for you to go be violent. Ask well, alcohol me, is a totally different thing.
Ask me how many deaths come from marijuana.
I don't know how many. None.
Nobody's ever died from using marijuana.
I know some people that tried. But the, you know the one thing?
It choked to death first.
That, you know, see, that's the point. I remember I guess you could OD if you ate it, you know, if you just got too much in your system and it just, and I don't think you'd OD.
No, I'm serious.
Feel sick or whatever.
You choke to death first trying to stuff enough down you. You would.
But if you're smoking, I know why I've seen, you know, so I've heard, I've been told that you have people that are out there. So the reason you can't OD by smoking marijuana is you get to a point that you can't lift the marijuana cigarette to your mouth. I've reached my limit. I can't find my mouth.
It's the epitome of chill. Yes, it's so to speak. So
well, the properties of marijuana, and are they so different from other drugs that they should be treated different? Or are we talking a principle? Because a lot of people, they, you know, it's marijuana. They want to legalize marijuana, and it's easy to make a case for marijuana because it has a lot of health benefits are claimed by a lot of people. There have been proven to the satisfaction of a lot of people that it helps with a lot of things. But there's also the aspect of just, you know, it's recreation. It doesn't bother you. It doesn't make them violent. They want to sit there and watch movies. And the thing is that I'm going, is that really the argument, though? Because you're dealing with, you know, any other drug, and they make this a Schedule One. It's like with heroin and LSD and all this other stuff. And I'm going, okay, well, let's talk about other drugs other than marijuana. But I know there's some other stories that you wanted to talk about. I want to make sure we get these in. Because I remember Montel Williams, you know, he was big on marijuana. And where did that come from? What was his motivation?
Well, he used to be a true believer in the law and say, I can't use something that's illegal. He has MS, you know, with severe.
He has his own television show. That's what we're talking about. He's a celebrity.
And he's an MS victim, has severe neuropathic leg pain. Mm. And he said he goes to doctors and they give him all this stuff, OxyContin, Vicodin, all of those things. And he says, I was almost too goofy to do my TV show, but I was still in pain. He said, finally, I gave in to some friends that said, come on, just try marijuana. Just try it. See what it does. And he says, and he's written op-eds in states where they're trying to get medical marijuana to the major newspapers and so forth. And this is what he says. He said, 3 puffs of a marijuana cigarette, just 3 puffs. And I slept through the night for the first time in years without leg pain. So he says, so whether the government likes it or not, I smoke marijuana. And when they come out and tell you that it has no medicinal value, that it's nothing but bad news, let me say this. They're lying to you, and they know it.
You know, I tell you what my wife has heard, and she's told me, how good it is for migraine headaches. So I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some people, I mean, you have a headache, I mean, bad, good, you can't get, you know, marijuana is a headache cure. So she's heard and told me. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, I want to make sure people, you should not be suffering in pain. I have my grandmother, when she died at 94, she went through a lot of pain for a lot of, I mean, when you're 94, there's like pain involved for, you know, just like waking up in the morning. And she was just, grandma, you don't have to suffer. This is, I mean, whatever it takes, man, I'll take it. That's, and for me to go, what? No, I'm sorry, grandma, you must suffer every waking moment of your life because the U.S. government said so. I'm a good person if I was to do that. Would that make me a good guy? Would it make me a good guy? Am I a better human being because of that? Seriously. And that's what this is going to come down to. It's going to come down to, do you love the man more than you love your family, yourself, your neighbor, your own life, your own body? Once we realize that, a lot of problems get solved. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Tony Ryan from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more fight, a little less fun. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart. And baby, satisfying me. Satisfying me, baby.
Yeah, satisfy me, baby. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Tony Ryan from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and a member of the Libertarian National Committee. And I, you know, with these kind of shiny badges, I tell you what, he can get some stuff done because he used to wear another shiny badge. He was law enforcement. He was the man, but the man came to realize that, I don't know, how long did it take you before you realized, this drug war thing wasn't working out?
Fairly early in my career, I'd say within 5 years, 10 years at the most, by the time I was sergeant. You know what really used to irritate me? Everybody wanted to be part of the Narcotics Bureau. They wanted to get off the street, get up in there, be the big narc and all that kind of stuff. Had a lot of calls for service. Denver's a busy town, has a lot of crime going on and so forth. And to get these guys that are doing out in the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, when I was a street patrolman, looking for someone to find a reason to shake down and find drugs and make a drug bust to take them off the street for an hour, 2 hours at a time. Well, who's left holding the bag to cover their calls and running as short of people to handle calls on a busy Friday night or something because they're chasing the drug bust? And I go, what is all this about? What is the deal about the drug bust? You know, they got people out here killing each other because they got mad. We got people out here fighting over all kinds of stuff and beating their wives and all that, and you're out putting some guy in for having a weed in his pocket, you know, and then we run out of people to handle the calls for service, which is the real reason for having the guys out in the marked cars. So that started me thinking about, what is all this about this stuff? And then I started thinking about it, and I just said, you know, this is you're trying to change human nature, and you can't do it by passing a law.
Social and economic engineering.
Yes.
Yep. Well, you know, we were talking off air about a bunch of stuff. I'll make sure we get to this. You wanted to talk about the cost and so on. There's an AIDS patient in South Dakota that was doing some stuff. Jack CIA, whatever that's about. But let's go, before we get to those, the American Medical Association came out recently saying some stuff. Go ahead and share that with the audience.
AMA came out as a group and finally said, it's time that we recognize that marijuana is actually medicine. It's a plant. Most of our medications come from plants. And we need to at least get it off Schedule 1 and put it on Schedule 2. So,
well, define Schedule 1 and 2, what that means.
Well, Schedule 1 in the narcotics area is for substances that have no medicinal value. In other words, have no value at all, basically.
Highly regulated, federal government gets to say what's what, well, you can't touch it, blah, blah, blah.
They say that anyway. You have to write prescriptions for the other drugs, but every other drug is legal and can be prescribed, including methamphetamine, except marijuana. Marijuana is a big evil demon.
Well, how many class ones are there? I mean, it's like heroin. Is heroin even class one?
Class two.
Really? Did they make LSD class one? I think it used to be. I don't know whether it is now or not.
You know, I'd have to look at the list again.
Well, it's getting to be a small list here. So we got marijuana and what else?
That people want to use.
Yeah,
For whatever the reason is they want to use it. And marijuana is the only one that let's face it. I ask people this all the time. I ask them today. There isn't a person in the audience I have today or in any other audience that they have that either doesn't have a relative or a friend that uses marijuana. It's whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, it's very prevalent in this country. They're not running around doing all kinds of weird, stupid things like some people that use alcohol are. So it's just, so the AMA finally decided. It wasn't just the AMA. It's been for years a DEA, whose main source of business is marijuana. We're told by their own administrative law judge, the first time in 1988, Judge Francis Young said, get over it. Get it off of Schedule 1 and put it on Schedule 2 and let doctors prescribe it for people. It is a medicine, and they should at least be able to get a prescription for it for their ills and so forth. They've had three of their administrative law judges tell them that. The most recent, a couple of years ago, the current administrative law judge has told them the same thing, and they choose to ignore that.
Well, where was the opposition to it being deemed as medically beneficial? I mean, there was all kinds of studies. People were claiming that, oh, that's just anecdotal evidence. It doesn't really count. There's no study, blah, blah, blah. All the people that were coming out against this was who?
Well, people that had a reason. We talked about that in the prior segment. Okay.
So, well, I mean, the AMA, you know, all of a sudden now they're coming out. Where the heck they've been the last 20 years?
Well, you know, they were afraid to speak out for a long time and so forth and so on. There's all kinds of pressures through government regulation and so forth can be put on doctors and so forth. But many doctors have told, I know a lot of people, several people that have said, when I have medical marijuana in this state, but my doctor said, go find some marijuana to help you with this, because I really can't help you, but that could. Doctors would prescribe it. They know it. And most of the studies have been under the radar studies, because one of the first things pro-marijuana being illegal people will say is, hasn't even been approved by the FDA. What was that V drug that was killing people, giving them heart attacks and stuff, that was supposed to be a painkiller that was approved by the FDA? But anyway, I can't remember the name of it now. But the reason it wasn't approved by the FDA is because the government won't let the FDA allow people to study it.
This is, it comes down to where do I put my trust? I mean, I put it in people that probably are trusted by a lot of people. And is it just the government? No. You go on the internet and you look at reviews for everything, movies, books, drugs, you know, whatever. I mean, I get more information just from people, and then other people are bolder than I. And they'll make whatever, you know, oh, man, Ernie, it's cool. I go, well, let's wait 20 years and see how your liver holds up. I mean, you know, but I want the freedom. I want the ability to make the decision. Certainly when I have a need, if I got a throbbing headache, you know, do I go to this thing that I know? 15 seconds. I'm cured. Or do I go over here and I go to the doctor that I wait for 20, you know, minutes, 20 days, 20 hours, whatever it is, longer to get to be able to prescribe something for me that then I got to wait till the next day to get. I mean, you know, it's insanity. And it used to be where you send your 7-year-old kid down to the local general store to get the laudanum, which is a, you know, derivative of opium, you know, for my back or my whatever.
Right.
You know, this is relatively recent. In fact, you know, they used to call it, how would they call it, nose candy or something like that. Cocaine, it was a big deal. I remember Charlie Chaplin, you know, had movies about it, you know, flinging it all and having fun, doing whatever. You know, this stuff was not a problem until the government got involved. So, okay, so we see that going. But now we have people that are in pain. We got people, AIDS patients in South Dakota. You know, tell us that story.
Well, we were talking about medical marijuana last time in South Dakota, trying to get the legislature last year to pass it because we lost the initiative by a small margin in a vote a couple of years before that. So one of our poster childs, if you will, for the movement and to try and convince the legislature was a rancher who contracted AIDS through some means. I forget what it was. And the thing that worked the best for him because of the medication he was taking for AIDS so that he would have an appetite so he could eat and not starve to death was to use some marijuana. So he had six little plants in his little ranch, grew himself free medicine, basically.
Oh, they saw them a ranch they wanted.
Well, his niece ratted him off to the cops. She got mad at him about something. So they come out.
He got weed.
Yeah, they come out of the gangbusters thinking we got a whole ranch full of marijuana, and they found six plants in the kitchen. And so about 40 cops had to go home, you know, because there was a little bit overkill. He went to court. Judge said, you can't use marijuana anymore, but if you have a problem, we'll give you Marinol. through Medicaid. The taxpayer will pay for it, and you'll get marijuana medication. Marinol has one cannabinoid.
When there's really, like, what, 50 or something?
60 plus.
Yeah.
In real marijuana. Now, the kick of this, he was growing his own medicine for free, not bothering anybody. He wasn't selling it to anybody else, just for him. Now, a medication that doesn't work, and I don't even know if he's still alive. I haven't followed up on that to see if he's starved to death yet or what he's done. No, he said he's going to continue to use marijuana because otherwise he will die before AIDS can kill him. You know what it's costing the taxpayers?
I have no idea.
$2,500 a month for him to get marijuana.
Oh, and yeah, I'm sure somebody's benefiting from this. Another beneficiary of the drug war.
I think it's
whoever's making Marinol.
It's called Big Pharma. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's probably a big threat to Big Pharma because, you know, you have natural occurring. Well, they just did it in Bolivia. Bolivia just said, you know what? They kicked out the DEA. They said, va con Dios, muchacho. And they tell the people, they go, you know what? You can start growing your own coca leaves in your backyard. Knock yourself out.
We have a judge from Bolivia, by the way. That's part of our organization.
Really?
Yes.
This is, it's so obvious what's going on, but, you know, who, you think the drug dealers are paying off politicians in Bolivia and Colombia and all these countries in Central America to legalize drugs? Heck no.
Well, there's a little more pressure there. You can take our money or die. What would you do?
You know, I'd move to Arizona. You know, when we come back, we'll, you know, hear some CIA stories from Tony, too. You stay right there. See, I give you a goodie. Yeah, here's another goodie for the archive. And you go to freedomsphoenix.com, and you see the connection to Declare Your Independence, and all the shows are right there, and you'll be able to, and you can do a search on Tony Ryan, R-Y-A-N. Remember that, because you're going to want to share this one with your friends. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Tony Ryan from LEAP.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
A smile on here and declare your independence, because we know that at the end of this whole thing, in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really, really messy first. You know, that's just a cycle. That's how it works. You know, I used to say, you know, my wife, you know, I go, you know, that even in the 90s, I'm going, can we hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave? I mean, because that's what it's going to take. I mean, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there? You know, a lot of times that's a headline that we put, you know, some of the crazy, stupid stuff that's going on, put up on Freedom's Phoenix. And I'm like, you know, it gets so bad. Sometimes, some days I'll just take a lot of stories and put them on one entry, one article, and just have it in big bold at the bottom and go, are we there yet? I mean, how bad does it have to freaking get? And you have somebody like Tony Ryan that's in law enforcement against prohibition, and he's gone 30 something years as a law enforcement. He's involved as a Libertarian National Committee member. He's heard all the stories. You know, you have people that come in with the horror stories. We have a gentleman on, Robert from Florida, you know, wanted to tell us his story, marijuana story. But, you know, I got a guest, and I welcome to call back another time, Robert, and we'll talk about it. But, you know, I got LEAP in here, man. You know, he's got plenty of stories. And they're all bad. My partner on the Freedom Summit, Mark J. Vicker, that's what he does. He's a criminal defense attorney. You know, it was a few years ago that he came out of law school and everything in 94. So he's relatively young, but it was about 10 years later. And he goes, Ernie, when I go home now, it's like a psychological thing with me. I can't talk to my family, my wife, my kids. I can't talk. I gotta go through this ritualistic thing. I mean, he's a real logic and reason kind of guy. And it really bothered him that he had to do this to feel better. He'd go to the bathroom. He had to wash his hands. He just goes, I gotta go wash my hands. It's gotta kind of make this separation break with my day. And he goes, yeah, I deal with all these, you know, scum of the earth, you know, whatever, criminal, de la, whatever. And he's not talking about the defendants. It's the government. He's going, I have to deal with these prosecutors and the judges and this whole thing. They are so slimy. The system has created that. They need those kinds of people to perpetrate this thing, to continue it. You know, and it goes up high. And people that, you know, don't have accountability to anybody, all the way up to, you know, heck, the White House, CIA. You know, you got some experiences with the CIA? Tell me about that.
Well, I don't, but Leaf's executive director, Jack Cole, the man that made the idea happen and took it and made it work and started an actual organization instead of a bunch of old cops talking about it, tells the story of what really turned him. He was on the Jersey State Police for 26 years, undercover narcotics agent for 14. Really into it, really doing all this kind of stuff. And he'll fess up to doing all kinds of things, like standing around a group of kids and saying, hey, why don't I go get some dope and smoke it, and then arresting them after they did that. Those kinds of tricks and so forth back in the 70s. They're about to make a super big bust with a joint task force from New York, being right there on the edge of New Jersey and so forth. A really big guy. And what you almost never get, that's in this drug industry, you don't get the big guy. The guys that are in the other countries and all that. They were going to get a guy a multi-million dollar deal. They're on their way to have this meeting to buy these drugs from the man himself. They get a call. Go talk to some people on your way. Well, we got to go. No, no, go talk to these people first. Okay. They were the CIA. And the CIA said, you're not making this bust. He says, well, we've been after this for years. You don't get this big guy like this. This will be the biggest bust you've ever seen in this country. No, you're not making the bust. And why not?
Because it's a CIA asset.
Because he buys arms with the money he makes from selling drugs to people in our country. And we need him to have those arms so he can overthrow this government that we don't like.
That's so how we roll.
So leave him alone. And so Jack said, you know, I decided government speaks out of both sides of its mouth. We'll throw our own people in jail and have the highest number of people in prison in the entire world. But we'll let this guy who wants to overthrow some government that for whatever reason we don't like, and it's okay if he sells those drugs to those people. So Jack said, enough of that. I'm done with this.
You know, and that's not a rare occurrence. That's how this stuff goes.
Yeah.
You know, this I remember my little, you know, Joe Arpaio story. It goes, I remember it was right after he got elected sheriff back in 92. And we were speaking at an event. It was a political event. I can't remember what it was. It was some organization. It was conservative, Republican. You know, it was probably the average age was over 50. You had, you know, 70, 80, 100 people there. And there was a big restaurant here called Spaghetti Factory. Yeah, that's what it was, Spaghetti Company or something like that. And they had a big meeting room. I remember they were in there. And he got up and did his, you know, pink underwear and taking away Playboys and they don't get to, you know, watch TV and, you know, and we were going to have Tent City and all that kind of stuff. And what was interesting is that the guys that were in the tents out in the desert heat weren't the criminals. I mean, real criminals. The guy was smoking marijuana, the guy that couldn't pay for auto insurance, the guy that, you know, I mean, the little petty stuff that they keep them in the tents for, you know, a month or two at a time. So I always thought, I go, so the murder raper and guy, they get air conditioning? I mean, you know, what kind of crap is this? It's just, you know, because it's just a warehousing thing. That's his mentality. Well, at the time, somebody asked him about, there was a book written called The Great White Lie. And it was an ex-DEA guy from, you know, Central America doing something. And Joe Arpaio had been the guy that I guess they tapped him. He was DEA Uber guy in Central America, and he was also in Turkey and this kind of stuff. So he goes on the talk show circuit or whatever, and he got his claim to fame, man. You know, he got his little taste of celebrity. Oh, he liked it. He liked it a lot. And he went on some morning show, oh, disgruntled employee, don't know, whatever, and so on, done. Well, when he was asked this question at this event we were at, he goes, oh, no, that was, he was, and he went through his standard thing. I get up after him, and his wife was there, and they had Donna and my wife were sitting at the head table, and they had turned off the video camera after him. He didn't mind having the video camera on because they had a city councilwoman was there, and she wanted to say some stuff about it without it being taped. So they turned it off. So I get up and I go, okay, is it on? Turned on. The little red light, we're gone, we're ready. The drug war is the biggest threat to your freedom that there ever has been. The whole crowd of these older people, yay! Our pile's like, man, we ain't in Kansas anymore. What the heck just happened? You know, this is mid-90s. So he's, you know, all of a sudden, and he and I had crossed paths before and that and so on. And he's like, man, what the heck? Well, then 2 weeks later, he goes to the Arizona Breakfast Club, you know, back before I, you know, had taken it over. And they had a lot of people there, and the same person got up and asked the same question. Now it's a different answer. Here's his answer. Well, the CIA and the DEA had different agendas. This is Joe Arpaio. He knows. He knows we know. He knows we know. He knows that we know. You know, this is, it's a game that they play. This is not a secret. They have certain agendas. What are they? I have no idea. I guarantee it's not defense of your individual rights. I guarantee you're freaking that. So what do you do? I save yourself. You know, free your own mind. Do something, but don't delude yourself. You know, as much as you would, some people would advocate using the propaganda. You know, they have a whole budget now from the Pentagon for propaganda on the U.S. citizens. You know, and how do they do that? They'll put it in, Murdoch will print it in Australian paper that he has, and then they report it on Fox News.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff is, so we have to free ourselves, and that's where the internet comes in. And that's why organizations like LEAP and even the Libertarian Party is such a big threat. That's also why you have guys like Bob Barr come in, Mr. Drug Warrior, and, you can get all kind of conspiratorial on where the heck he came from after he was defeated in 02 for being a drug warrior, and all of a sudden he wants to go and be one of the buddies with the guys that defeated them. Where the heck did that come from? Oh yeah, that's right, he was CIA. You know, so I'm, you know, how conspiratorial do I got to be? You know, am I crazy? Or do I just go, makes you go, hmm. You know, that's what Montel does a lot. It makes you go, hmm. You know,
right.
So this is stuff that, you know, guys like Tony and myself, you know, we know the truth. We know the truth, which is what? I don't know, some facts. What do you know? Did you learn a little bit today? What are you going to do about it? Hey, we got to get them drugs. Why? Is it the drugs that the problem, or is it the drug war? I don't know, Tony. What do you think? I mean, how bad is this drug war?
Well, it made the problem 10 times worse than it was before they started it.
So, I mean, is there some other social thing in this country we would, I mean, if I had to pick on something to do, you know, to go after that would alleviate the biggest chunk of problems, to do the most good for Americans and their freedoms and their health and every aspect, the children, you know, pick your, you know, for the women, for the minorities, for the children, for the poor, I mean, what would be something more important than the stopping of the drug war?
Well, there are other things. There are other issues, but here's the key.
I don't know. Give me another issue.
Tobacco. But it's about education is what it's about. Getting the real facts out to help people make informed decisions.
All right, here's a guy, Tony Ryan, you got to visit with, a gentleman that's doing that very thing. I'm, you know, thank you, Tony, and your wife, and to all of you out there that just took the time to listen, maybe get another perspective on this, because we are consistent. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? We'll see you tomorrow.